Hello, and welcome to the Dress in Splendor podcast. Luke 12:27 states, "Look at how the wildflowers grow. They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these." Our mission here is to share stories from men and women that can help you learn how to stop laboring or striving after what you want to accomplish, but rather to trust in your heavenly Creator to guide you in your everyday life. If He has a plan for you, He will make a way. All He wants is our daily yes to Him and for us to stop worrying about what tomorrow will bring. If we can do that, then we, as children made in His image, can be dressed in even grander splendor than the beautiful wildflowers of the field. I'm your host, Lydia Summer, and I'm so glad you're here today. This week, I'm joined by author David Sundy to talk about his debut book, Small Batch Disciple Making. When I first read David's book, I was completely struck by how captivating his book is. David talks about the different rhythms of disciple making and how it's important to walk with people in the church just as Jesus walked and lived life with his disciples while on earth. Discipleship is so much more than just mentorship between a discipler and their disciple. Discipleship encompasses so much of the gospel and fruits of the Spirit, and I'm excited for y'all to listen to my conversation with David as he dives deeper into this subject. I hope that you will be encouraged by the Holy Spirit as you listen. Welcome to the Dress in Splendor podcast. Let's get started. Well, I want to just kind of jump into your book and talk about it. And I've got it right here. It's been well loved and earmarked. And I know that's a sin for many people to do that, but that's just, I love it. I love just marking in there. It makes it seem like it's a lot more loved. And that's what this book was for your book, Small Batch Disciple Making. And I just kind of, you know, of course, want to start off with the question of why did you write this book and why this topic on discipleship?
Well, as someone who's grown up in the church, I feel like I never really heard about discipleship, but it was expressed, it was demonstrated without really much of a teaching on it. Mm. But here's the maybe the best analogy that I can use is it's the difference between a travel agent or a tour guide. Mm. A lot of us often look at Jesus as kind of a travel agent. And I would say Jesus will always disappoint. He will always feel distant if he's allowed to be a travel agent. What he wants to do is take the journey with us. And I think that's what we see out of the scriptures when Jesus calls together, and it's not just the 12. Specifically, it's not just the 12 men. Jesus had this community, this co-ed community, that he was very close to, but also very intentional with. Hmm. In fact, I went through the Gospels, and you kind of see Jesus had an idea, I-D-E-A, mm-hmm. instruction, demonstration, experience, and assessment. Hmm. So most of what we experience out of church is a lot of instruction.
Yeah.
And then we're asked to be a volunteer. But what we miss out on is something that is A, more experiential, and B, more developmental, because we don't have someone walking with us. In fact, I feel like the church is mostly sitting at the feet of professional clergy versus in the shadow of ordinary and earnest Christians. And so my desire to write a book on this was to give people a resource to say, you already have what it takes to be like him. In fact, that's what Jesus said. A student, when fully trained, is not better than his teacher, but will be like him. That's Luke 6:40. Mm. Jesus had this notion that you could be like him.
Yeah.
And I think we have what it takes based on our journey with Christ to be able to invite people to follow.
Yeah. Do you think that your upbringing kind of gave you more of a passion to want to disciple and also teach on disciple making? Or was it just something that the Lord placed on your heart kind of later in life?
Yes and no. Here's the thing. My church, and I think a lot of churches like it, had a kind of unintentional strategy. And that was, if you come here, grow old here, raise your family here, you'll get the goods. You're going to get opportunities to serve, learn the word of God. You're going to you're going to be supported in the thick and the thin of life. But here's what's happened. Culture has shifted. We're lucky if people in metropolitan areas stick around for longer than 4 or 5 years. So culture and technology has created higher levels of mobility that when I'm talking to churches now, I'm saying, what you have to see yourself almost as a college ministry. You might get someone for 4 years. So then you have to see not as a place to grow old, which was the church I grew up in, and I got a lot of good stuff from it, but it wasn't a sending church because the idea was grow old. Churches have to think about how do we send people out to their next station in life? Because chances are we're not going to be here in 20 years. And so when I'm trying to steward my own influence as a neighbor, as a dad, as a friend, as someone who's journeying with Jesus, I'm trying to be thoughtful about how I impart a living faith to those closest.
Do you think, since you mentioned that the kind of the term, I guess, that people stay in a church is between 4 and 5 years, is that more because of, and I guess the word, if they're unsettled, that they feel like they need to move on, or maybe church hurt or something else, if, or I mean, it could be just life change and that they move on to something else. But do you think that there's something to be said about why people are not really living in the church to old age, or is it because it's just there's a shift going on, or?
Well, there's a lot of misunderstandings, and we live in a disposable society. I mean, we would rather find a new job than reconcile with a bad leader supervisor, or we have long-standing friendships that can't reconcile, and so we're like, well, I'll just make a new best friend. And I think that happens in the church as well. But the big shift is mobility. The idea that now I go away to college and technology is like I can live wherever I want. But like I talk to pastors. There's a church in San Francisco that I've been interacting with. They're like, yeah, we're lucky if someone stays here longer than 3 years. So we've got a 2 year cycle that we're trying to make some deposits because San Francisco is such an expensive place to live, as well as a divisive place to live. But I'm talking with a pastor in Birmingham, Alabama, and he's like, we get people for like 3, 4, and 5 years, and then they get a job move and they're on to Atlanta or they're on to Nashville. And so, our society, our culture has changed that most people aren't living where they necessarily grew up, it seems.
I mean, I'm one of those people. I mean, as an army brat, I kind of moved around, so there was no possible way I could have grown up and stayed in the same church necessarily. But so, and yet it is interesting that this is more of a go, go, go kind of world, though. And I think that because of that, disciple making is a little bit harder to accomplish sometimes, especially. But I think that there is a desire for that. I know that for myself, just speaking for myself, that one of the biggest things that I want and look for in a church is if I can be mentored or discipled by an older woman or someone in the church that I can walk alongside with. And so I try and seek that out. And sometimes it's actually a little bit more difficult to find someone in my church. And so I guess my question is, what do you think the best approach to discipleship is? And why should our generation actually seek to disciple and be discipled?
So I like to use the language of apprenticing because it just has kind of a tradesman's language. And I grew up in a blue collar family of different people who were electricians and plumbers and carpenters. So, but the idea of an apprentice is that there's always someone further along. And it's not just instructional, it's demonstrating and then giving you experience and giving you feedback. I think Christianity needs more of that. And that's what makes it so life-giving. But we have to break out of the consumptive model that I want to be on the receiving end. I think we need to work out our salvation like a well, I'll use another now, like an addict works out their sobriety. So think about this. I don't know how well you know AA, like Alcoholics Anonymous. There's the 12-step program. Step one is admit that you have a problem and you're powerless to do anything about it. Well, that sounds like a simple confession of coming to faith. Well, I've got this problem. It's called sin, and I can't save myself. Great. Welcome to the community. Then you take about 10 steps of essentially making amends because your addiction has spoken louder than your intention. Burn some bridges along the way, and it's good to retrace your steps. But the genius of 12-step recovery is step 12, which says sponsorship. So, in other words, you have walked through the steps. You still have further to go. You still have more to learn. You still are tempted. But the way you work out your sobriety is go find someone at step one. And this is what I think is, and look at AA has no overhead. They have no facilities. They have no paid staff. They're just a movement that's bringing, I'll use the word, salvation. They're bringing deliverance and healing to many lives, countless lives. And I'm saying the gospel can do that, and it's only through disciple making. Now, let's be clear. I want to find someone further along, but I also, to be healthy, need to be bringing someone along. Because you've got influence, Lydia, whether you know it or not, and people are wanting to follow your lead. So I think God has already put people ahead of you that maybe have been doing career longer, doing faith longer, whether it be marriage or family or all the things. But there's also a journey that you've been on that people want, need what you have. And I think if we could figure that out and break out of consumptive model where I'm just trying to quote unquote get fed, I think that's where real life change begins to happen.
Speaking on that, in terms of not just finding someone or someone walking alongside you as you being the apprentice, but for if let's say I did want to disciple someone or bring someone and walk alongside them, as you mentioned, what are some just helpful tips that you would give? Is it because I know that when I was younger, because I do have a heart for discipleship, and I just kind of there were just a couple girls who I thought at the time that the Lord placed on my heart and that I wanted to, meet with them on a more regular basis back in college. And with one of them, I'm still am, friends to this day, and at least the Facebook setting, because I don't know what it is, but no one likes to really text anymore. So, but regardless of that, I just wonder, is there any kind of helpful tips that you could give in terms of how you know who the right person to walk alongside with would be? It's I don't think it would just be like, oh, this is the person I need to do life with, or maybe it is that simple. I'm not sure. If you could just speak on to that a little bit.
Well, in the book, I tried to outline a kind of the selection process, and I just looked at Jesus's life, and I think it was so interesting. In the book of Acts, it talks about, and they took note that these were ordinary men. They had been with Jesus. I mean, and if you look at the disciples, they were not A students. They were figuring it out, and they had already returned to their trade. So clearly, they weren't at the top of the class to be in the rabbinical school. But I outlined kind of what I call is what is when we're looking at someone who might be, because there's a commitment. I like to say you should be committed to a person for a process for a purpose. Now, the person means there's an intentionality with a covenant. I think the process is some version of healing and sanctification. And then the purpose is, can you do this also? Kind of that go and do likewise, that reproductive. But the faith, FAITH, was faithful. Are you chasing them? Or there's just a faithfulness about their life. Available. Do they have the bandwidth to give themselves to it? Initiative. You don't want to be pulling teeth. Say, like there's got to be some internal, like they want it. Teachable. Is there defensiveness? Because if there is, what you're really trying to do is help them see blind spots. That's love. Blind spots isn't just giving them pats on the back. Blind spots is like, oh, honey, when you say this, This is how it comes across. That's not what I meant. I know, and I love you, but and then I would say helpful. People are already doing some lifting, and so once we look at that, then I start to go, oh, that's someone I can work with. Now, some people might just need counseling, and it's really hard to ever commission someone who it needs therapy. And I'm a fan of therapy. I have a guy that I meet with regularly, but I think that when you're looking for a disciple, I would look for those five things as a faith.
That's actually very helpful. I think that if I had used that in my past, I might have been able to avoid, I don't know, it's just some relationships. And with one of the other girls that I discipled or wanted to disciple, it just kind of didn't end well. And I think that there was just some underlying things that kind of happened. And so that was for sure. It was more of like, I like you, I just want to disciple you. And there was not much something deeper into that. But it does seem, I don't know, I've never really had this conversation with people my age and younger in terms of disciple making, apprenticeship, as you call it, and things like that. Do you think that we as a generation and younger and things like that are kind of a little bit more turned off to wanting to receive discipleship because of this world is kind of becoming a lot more independent? Or do you think that it's just because there's a lack of understanding what that truly means and look like, and if it's even being taught in the church?
Oh, you are hitting on all the right. I mean, this question is so generationally sensitive right now. And what I would say is, in every generation that we have, and it's been said there's currently seven generations alive, but it seems like you could go through and find there's authority issues in every generation, right? Maybe it manifests differently, but it's kind of hard to find someone that we really will receive from as an authority figure. It's not impossible, but we need to know that they have our best interests at stake and not just their own interests at stake. But what I would say is really unique to what you're bringing up, is today people are what I would call entirely spiritually curious, but totally institutionally skeptical. So all the institutions have failed us. Government, who trusts government? But like in my dad's generation, everyone went to quote unquote do their own part in any war. There was some level of patriotism that this generation just is missing. We would rather protest than do our part for our country and fight for freedom. Yeah, I mean, but to be fair, government has not been trustworthy. But if you start going through all of our institutions, military, education, family, marriage, they've all disintegrated to some level, and certainly, maybe primarily, the church. So people remain spiritually curious, but they're like, I don't know if I can trust the church. I don't want to conform. If I join there, does that make me like all the rest of them? So we have deeply held spiritual interest, curiosity, and hunger, but we have a systemic problem that is we have a hard time trusting the institutions. And that's why, Lydia, when you start talking about a relational experience, a covenantal partnership where you say, I'm in this for you. I care enough about you to speak into your life, and I hope that you can receive it, because that's what grace is. Grace invites us to deeper levels of participation without the conversation ever becoming terminal. So that's what God does to us. He accepts us, he loves us, but he also corrects us and convicts us. And in some cases, we can receive rebuke. And that's why I think when we start talking about disciple making in the way of Jesus, it has so much more of a relational feel than an institutional or even a programmatic.
For those of our listeners who found us because they were first introduced to our business, Splendor Magazine, you might not have realized that our website recently got a facelift. With this new website, we believe it better emulates our mission, and we are so pleased with the results and believe you will benefit from this as well. We give our thanks and much appreciation to Design Studio Morgan. Design Studio Morgan is a full-service web design, SEO specialist, and web application studio for all your small to medium-sized business needs. Run by mathematician and writer Drew Schaffner, Design Studio Morgan offers websites, web apps, cloud installations, domain administration, and more. With his help, we have put together a new website which costs less, has advanced features such as print-on-demand store, user account management, and practically limitless growth ability. You can follow him on Twitter at dsmorgan_ or check out his website at dsmorgan.com. That's dsmorgan.com. Now, let's get back to the show. Well, speaking for, or I guess to the Big C Church, I was just thinking in terms of like if discipleship is possible outside of the Little C Church, and you know, if we should be challenged to actually look for people outside of our building and walking alongside in life with. And as you said, there are people who are spiritually curious. So does discipleship mean, or disciple making, apprenticeship, does that mean only looking for people who are already Christians, or do you think that it allows room for those who have questions, and if they're willing to walk alongside you to ask those questions, or maybe is that a different kind of relationship? Does that allow freedom, I guess, to open it up outside of the Little C Church, I guess?
You're asking all the right organic questions, because what we don't want is a formula and a program. And a program assumes everyone starts at the same point, but we know that lives don't all begin with the same point. Mm-hmm. So if I start meeting with someone, and a friend was telling me about this experience where, you know, she grew up in a very abusive situation. And so when she was introduced to the idea of God as our Father in heaven, she reacted and like, I can't relate to that person. And you're like, oh, that would have been good to know on the front end.
Yeah.
So what I would say is, let's go with where people are, or let's begin there. Mm-hmm. And you go, okay, is this someone who crossed the line to the Lord Jesus Christ? My mom was an immigrant, and when she was being a naturalized citizen at the courthouse steps, the judge looked at this group of immigrants and said, "You are all citizens by choice. Oh, everyone else is by birth, but yours is a choice." And I can use that to say consent matters. And the Lord wants our consent. But it also matters for us to give consent to being in a developmental relationship. So I want to encourage you. I'm going to coach you. I want to support you, but I want to speak into your life. I mean, and so sometimes I think everyone's looking for that, whether they're a Christian or not. So it's where we start is really important. In fact, when I wrote this book, I wrote it with the idea that it should be read ideally in community, not in isolation. So read this with someone presumably either further along or someone you're bringing along. And find the words to talk about the difference Christ is making. Find the words through the each chapter has its own section to kind of work out your own faith and find your own rhythm. But what is the story God's been writing that you can articulate? Because let's be honest, one of the great challenges in all of life is putting words to how we feel.
Totally.
This was supposed to be your way to kind of find the words to articulate the depth of faith, and to be able to give it away.
Yeah. Well, and as you were saying about, that our stories are being written, and our lives have a story and each are unique to ours. I already know the answer to this, I guess, but I would love for you to speak on this in terms of how you think that disciple making, discipleship, and walking alongside someone can actually shape our lives, and our faith in today's world. Like, do you think if someone who's never in that kind of relationship versus someone who is, do those lives, do you think, look differently in the end run?
So I'll just say it this way, like, you can grow wherever you're planted, and the Lord can use that. There's fertile soil everywhere. It's a matter of how fertile is, or tender is our own heart. But I will say this: I cannot self-help my way to transformation. Try as I might, and rededicate as many times as I have, get really committed to spiritual disciplines and follow, like, quiet time. Listen, those are all wonderful things. But at the end of the day, I need people in close proximity who know me and are able to speak into my life. That has always, I mean, if you look at any big moment, go through all the chapters, elementary school, teenage, college, 20 somethings, marriage, kids, whatever the chapters you want to outline, I would argue every one of those could be traced back to impactful people or hurtful, damaging people that we're still recovering from. And so I think that there's something about the way God's wired us. So faith is not private, it's personal, but it's not private. And for human flourishing, I need to find a community of faith. And that usually is going to involve a standing appointment. I don't grow in community outside of a standing appointment. There's people that I really enjoy, but I haven't seen for 18 years or whatever, because I moved or they moved or they took another job or they moved out of our neighborhood. And oh, I liked having them close by, but whatever. We need a standing appointment.
Well, this next question is you wrote this quote, and I really want to speak on this topic because I have a hard time resting. So it's about Sabbath. And I think a lot of us, even today, going back to how our Western culture is kind of set up to be, is like we just don't know how to rest. And even in my at my alma mater, my school, like none of us ever we were known for doing a lot, and we took pride in that. So you wrote something in your book said we work from our rest, not rest from our work in regards to Sabbath. And so you did go into it a little more. I would love to just kind of know exactly what you mean by that.
Well, I've always kind of scratched my head when Jesus was accused of breaking the law by healing on the Sabbath, and he asked this question that always kind of I was like, okay, now what did is the Sabbath for man or is man for the Sabbath? What's the And I would go back to the creation story. And for you and I, as people seeking to follow in the way of Jesus, we need to know our origin story. And when God created the world, and by the way, I would just say as an aside, God created this world and said it was good, but the world that God created is not the world that you and I know as normal, isn't
That's
the
right,
world that God intended. So we're living in a broken humanity, but when he created all things and he said separated light from darkness, and he created and then the Sabbath. When did Sabbath begin? In the evening. We think of the start of the day at the first of the morning. So the idea was, are we going to work out of a place of rest, or are we going to rest from a place of exhaustion? And so we have this work narrative that we need to feel productive, to feel validated. We need to we need control tendencies, guilty, some level of perfectionism, guilty. I want to feel like I did enough to feel like I earned my rest. And God's on the other side of that. He actually has much more of a play narrative, which is really interesting. Think about this. We think about spiritual disciplines, prayer, study, fasting, solitude, silence, all the things that are, but those are things we work at. And I think God has, we play basketball. We play the violin. And we don't play in isolation. To play means to find it in community. So I wanted to interrupt this idea that A, Sabbath means inactivity. I think it's renewing activity, but it demonstrates our trust. So can I yield and say, I have an inbox full of things that I need to respond to, or I have some things that are coming out, but I've worked well this week. I've honored God in the hours, but I am going to trust him in the same way that he invites us to tithe. Do I give him a portion of my revenue to say, no, I trust you to make all the ends meet? It's the same way with Sabbath. Or do we just keep working, squeezing a little more time because we have the energy? Or do we let our minds and our hearts and our bodies lie dormant to renew? And this is what God commanded the fields every 7 years. Don't plant. Well, for people who are basing their lives on agriculture, that's crazy talk. And he's like, let the land germinate. Let it become fertile again. And so I don't think we create enough margin to be able to renew. And there's things that I give myself to that are exhausting, but it fills my heart. So it might be, for me, it's practicing hospitality. Well, I have to clean my house, but I also like to make sure people are called by name and invited. And I just think that's a wonderful practice. And we tried to raise our kids with this idea of hospitality as one of the ways we express that faith. I don't know if that is that helpful.
No, it definitely is. And you've touched on a few already of the rhythms that you discuss in your book, and we didn't talk about how it kind of separates into those different rhythms. So we talked on Sabbath, generosity, hospitality. I can't name them all at the top of my head, but another one is worship. And you can name the other ones in just a moment, but worship is, of course, for me, just very just special to my heart, regardless of the singing aspect, because a lot of people, though, in tying it with worship, they assume that worship is mostly of the voice, like singing unto the Lord, singing praises unto God. And so that's kind of another, like a little wrong understanding that I think that we are understanding better and having a right understanding of what worship actually means. But in regards to worship and disciple making and discipleship, how do those two play together and hand in hand?
I would say it this way. Maybe worship is stretching, like stretching what yoga is to disciple making.
Oh,
You
nice.
want both. It's not an either or. And yoga without stretching, and it's just not going. You're going to hurt yourself.
That's true.
Now, in the book, I try and use some fresh language, like. For evangelism, I talk about it as hospitality. Sometimes we're making room for someone, other times we're learning to receive. But in either case, we're trying to discern who God's prepared in advance. Similarly, I talk about compassion. Well, compassion is simply learning to find or identify others' needs as different than my own. But in the end, we're all needy and in need of grace. When I talk about worship, I use the language of gratitude. And within that kind of language, I think gratitude is a discipline, especially in a society that has a growing level of intolerance and victimhood. I think we have a society that picks up offenses way too easily. We are inherently suspicious and don't trust. And that translates into our relationship with God. So I think gratitude is a really important discipline. But I think it has a couple of features. Number one, I think there is a physicality. Now, I enjoy music. I live in Austin, Texas. We fancy ourselves the live music capital of the world. No offense, Nashville. And so I enjoy music and I enjoy praise and worship too. I'm not a singer. No one's ever asking me to sing. But I think there's a posture that we need to learn and lean into. And I try and talk about that. But here's the other part. I think what worship does is when we start to learn the names of God, what we're learning isn't just attributes about who God is, we're learning experiences with how God has revealed who God is. So if you go through all of Scripture, God has revealed himself, but he's also transcended that moment with his character. So it's like saying to Hagar in Exodus when she's run away, and all of a sudden the principle of first mention is El Roy, the God who sees. Like, I see your abuse, Hagar. I'm with you in that hurt. So one of the things I like to do is I use the analogy of to worship is to grow your thesaurus, because you have more ways to reflect on the revelation of God for you personally. So when and in what season has God been your provider, your refuge, your strength when you had none, your healer, your deliverer, a strong tower, all the things. And I try and include a list of all those names, but then I also ask, what are some of the names that are hard to relate to, that feel like a disconnect? Because that's worth mining down and figuring out what is it that helps me not experience God that way. But society that is void, we live in a society of relative truth. And what I'm saying, it like if you take out relative, I'm saying, and I don't love this phrase, I'm speaking my truth. I use that kind of term loosely. But listen, there are times where God, who is unchanging and absolute, has revealed himself to me as all of these things. And that deepens my sense of declaring God's value and worth and how it's changed me. Even if I don't feel it in this moment, he marked my life as the great physician or whatever. And it allows us to be so rooted in what is absolute and unchanging truth. So that's the connection, I think, to worship and practicing gratitude.
Heyo! Our spring issue has been shipped out, and we are so excited by the feedback we've been receiving so far. We have heard from many people about how they have felt seen as they read similar testimonies in their lives and how they've been encouraged by the articles shared. This is one of our favorite issues yet, not only in beauty, but also through the theme that we centered it around, which is seasons of waiting. This issue centers around Romans 8:28, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. We use this verse to guide our conversation in how, despite the hard seasons we may be facing currently or in the future, God does work for the good of those who love him. If you'd like to grab a copy of our magazine, we still have some available for purchase. Go to our website, splendormag.com/magazine-issues, to find our latest issue. And for a discount, use code DIS15, that's DIS15, to get 15% off your total purchase. And feel free to share this code with a friend that you think might be blessed by this issue. Again, go to splendormag.com, that's splendeurmag.com/magazine-issues to get your copy today. Now, let's get back to the show. That's beautiful. I think it's, I don't know, it just makes it worship even more. I've already said the word, but beautiful in a way. And just knowing that there is, as you said, it's just a growing thesaurus. I love that. And that there are multiple ways that we can actually get to know the heart of God. And I think that having this kind of relationship with someone, walking alongside someone, is really important. And because my audience for this podcast and my readers for the magazine is generally not all single, but there are some single women like myself who, as you, I also have not really been a part of a church longer than collectively, I guess, 6 years. That was when I was stuck at home and in high school. And my church was great, and I had wonderful, a small group leader, and so it kind of was a little like there was disciple making happening in high school, but it's almost like it's harder to find after you graduate and when you're off to college. And even now, as a single woman myself, being 30 and having moved around a lot, and praying to the Lord, like, Lord, could you please bring someone alongside me? And that there have been snippets of that prayer answer, but not really someone that I've necessarily walked alongside with. And so I know I'm not the only person who's had this kind of prayer on my heart. So I would love if you could speak to these men and women who may be listening about how, I don't know, any encouragement that they can, that you can give to them, who maybe would desire this kind of relationship, but for one reason or another, just their prayers haven't been answered yet. And if there's anything that maybe we need to do to kind of help facilitate that kind of relationship with someone.
So I always think disciple making needs to happen in proximity. The best developmental relationships are in proximity. Everyone can identify a heroic figure. We're all inspired by, Mother Teresa and Martin Luther King Jr. All. But when people describe a mentor, I always say, "Well, did they know you, or did you just follow them?" Like, C.S. Lewis was a wonderful mentor, but I've never met him and I never heard him like speak in person. I've read his books. So there has to be something relational, and you want to find someone further along, but it's worth them knowing you as much as you know them. So proximity matters. I would also say chemistry matters. I pastored for a long time, and one of the things I would always say is if I reached a point where I was going to make a referral to someone to go, okay, I'm kind of the EMT, I'm the ambulance driver, and I can do triage and put a bandage on, but I think there's some deeper work. I would recommend a counselor, and I would say counseling is like courtship. If the chemistry's there, not there on the first two dates, go find you another counselor, or I've got another name. I think the same is true when we are, say, we're in a faith community, like a church, and you're serving in some capacity. Maybe you're singing in the choir on the worship team. Maybe you're a part of the young adult ministry or the women's, whatever. You're going to start to observe women that you're naturally drawn to, and they're not going to be selling themselves. In fact, my guess is, they're not necessarily even going to recognize themselves as a mentor. One of my concerns, Lydia, is I think every church is feels like they're answering their call to make disciples, but I started talking to earnest Christians who've spent their lives growing up in the church, teaching, the worship, the volunteering, the mission trips, the youth group, the small groups. And I would start saying, "Could you disciple someone?" "Oh, actually, I wouldn't know where to start. I don't know. I wouldn't know what to say. I don't even know if I could lead someone to Christ." And I was like, "Oh my goodness, this is a huge problem." And my point is, I think people make disciples better than programs. But when you see someone and you're drawn to them, whether they see themselves as a disciple maker, pursue them, invite them. And again, my book was just a tool, kind of a backdrop, to build a relationship and find the words for what God's already been doing. And it was meant to be done in community. And that could be with three to five, it could be one-on-one. But I would say find that person. Now, I'll say it to the other way. If you're sitting in that women's ministry or in that young adult group, or if you're sitting in a small group and you see someone recently move in, they join your small group, they're new to town. They have no community. You know, they're like that Lego piece that's looking to, find an attachment. Invite them to dinner, take them to coffee, hear their story. Start doing the investigative detective work. Talk about what their family of origin like. Talk about how their trajectory of faith. Talk about like all the things on a substantive level, hear their story and then see what God does with the chemistry there. Chances are, if you're seeing them as someone that you're probably seeing them as someone like God sees them, in need, open and desirable. And that just happens with discerning eyes. When Paul says, "Open the eyes of my heart," he was not saying physically see them. He was talking about discernment. There's a spiritual, maybe there's kind of wow, there's a connection here. There's an influence here that the Lord has given me a heart for them. I would say invite them not to a formal relationship, but just start inviting them into parts of your life and see how the chemistry unfolds.
Well, thank you for that. I'm tucking it away for my own just advice to keep and everything. And so I've really enjoyed this conversation with you, David. Thank you for being so patient with me. As we mentioned earlier before this conversation started, that it took a long time, but it was well worth it. And I'm sure that this timing of when this episode will come out will be at the right, at God's timing, the right timing.
Sure.
And so I'd love to end with just one last question that I ask all of our guests is that our podcast is called Dress in Splendor and it's based off of Luke 12:27. And so the kind of inspiration, I guess, that I'd love to give to our listeners is how we can be dressed in even grander splendor than the wildflowers of the field because we're made in God's image. And the only reason why we're not is because we're not trusting in our Father for our lives and not trust, not obeying Him and not worrying about tomorrow. And so, in light of the conversation we've had, what is some advice that you would give to our listeners and how they can be dressed in even grander splendor than the wildflowers of the field?
Oh, Lydia, you are saying something that is an identity statement. The whole thing that you've given birth to and is an identity statement. And this is the thing that everyone needs to hear is that you already are. Don't think of it as someday I'll be dressed in splendor. You already are. I'm tired of this narrative that says, oh, all I am is a sinner saved by grace. I'm like, that is wrong. God sees you as the righteousness in Christ Jesus. And so when you name this whole initiative, this whole enterprise about being dressed in splendor, and then the verse that you're quoting says it even Solomon in all the splendor was dressed like one of these. That's what tipped me off to that. Solomon, the other name that no one ever uses is Jedidiah, which simply means loved by God. You already are. We don't make ourselves more lovable. We don't try and make ourselves more tolerable. We're not just a wretched sinner that God tolerates. You are Jedidiah. You are dressed in splendor. You already are. You may not believe it. You may not be able to receive it. You may not feel like it, but you're in fact loved by God and already dressed in splendor. Walk in God's pleasure. Feel God's joy in that.
Amen. What an incredible answer. Thank you so much for just joining me on this podcast. Like I said again, I'm just going to say it one more time. I really enjoyed our conversation. And I so hope that more people will actually find your book, read it, and actually apply it to their lives. How can they find your book? How can they find you? And I can put it on our show notes when we're done.
Oh, great. Well, Lydia, I want people to find your voice too. I want people to find your magazine and your podcast. Because I think what you're saying is really important. My publisher asked me to create a website, which was a little uncomfortable for me. So it's literally davidsundy.com, SUNDE.com. The book is available on all the links. Nav Press has been wonderful to work with, but it's on Amazon and all the things. And then I do some travel around a bit, and I post that. I have a Instagram feed called Small Batch Disciple Making that I share a little bit of what I'm up to, and I would love to communicate. And we're trying to build a little bit of an ecosystem around the book for people who feel like, I want to be a disciple maker, but I've never been discipled. And I can't find a discipler. So I'm saying, find you two or three friends and create a disciple making cohort. And I have some things on the website that I'm trying to encourage and fan the flame and be a resource so that we can create a non-programmatic but decentralized network, not just converts, not just believers, but disciple makers.
Well, that is incredible. I had no idea about that last part. So I am excited to share that. It will be in our show notes, like I mentioned. But again, thank you so much for joining the show. What a pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much. You're a gift, Lydia. Thank you for having me. I
Of
appreciate it.
course. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you next time. I don't know about you, but I felt extremely encouraged and blessed after leaving this conversation with David, and I hope you were as well as you listened along. This topic of discipleship is so important as the church needs to walk alongside one another to stay unified and strong, especially in this climate of election year. Discipleship is a wonderful tool to help bridge the gap and love others as Jesus would, and we are all called to make disciples, no matter who you are or what you do. I hope you were encouraged by our conversation, and if you think that this episode might be a blessing for someone in your life, please share. Our hope, as always, with this podcast is to help others feel encouraged and learn how to be dressed in grander splendor than the wildflowers of the field. Make sure to rate and review wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram at Dressed in Splendor to know when our next episode drops. And if you want to give me a follow where you can find encouraging and the occasional silly content, you can find me on Instagram at The Lydia Summer. The music of the Dress and Splendor podcast was produced by Jael Arekasi. Find him on Instagram at Sound of Pastel Kid for more of his work. That's Sound of Pastel, Pastel Kid. Lastly, thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. May you be blessed as you continue on in your day, and may God be glorified through your work.